You're listening to the 18th episode of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. Are you going to Dragon Con in September? You don't have to wait until you're at the con to get your fix of nerdiness. You can visit DragonConTV.com for all of the latest pop culture, fantasy, and sci-fi sketch comedy. Once again, that's DragonConTV.com. If you haven't had a chance yet or you're listening on iTunes, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. Or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on the Gearheart, Jonathan, Keegan, Augustus, and Cog journey into the tunnels below the palace, and one of the hangman's sinister plots comes to fruition. Will the Seekers still be able to stop the destruction of the world without their beloved Cirrus? Will they be able to save Agent Maeve Manners? Find out on the Gearheart. Jonathan just barely managed to pull behind the wall before another shot glanced off the stones. Rock dust trickled into his eyes, and he spat into his hands and wiped his face. The Harbinger was about to duck back out and return fire when Augustus stopped him.
"What are you trying to do? Make him mad? You'll never hit him!"
Augustus shouted.
"Yes!"
Jonathan replied, his blood boiling.
"I don't like being fired on!"
Jonathan took a few swift breaths like he was going to dive into icy waters and ducked back out of cover, popping off two shots. Another ear-splitting shot answered him, and Jonathan's pistol exploded in his hands, spewing parts back at the frightened man. Hot shrapnel from his gun swarmed on Jonathan's arms and burrowed in like insects. Jonathan screamed and fell back behind cover, his bloodied arms held incredulously before his eyes. He felt Cog's strong arm wrap around him and drag him further away from the opening.
"No! No!"
Jonathan repeated over and over to his shivering, slightly mangled hands.
"I needed those!"
"Jonathan, we have to fall back," said Keegan without a second's pause. "There's no way that we can deal with something like this on our own."
"It's too late for that, Headmaster. If we don't save Agent Manners, I don't think it'll turn out well for everyone."
Jonathan's voice quivered as he spoke, and his breaths came in short bursts. Cog's sword flickered and appeared in her hand. She snaked past the others and found her way to the opening. She ducked out for a split second and then withdrew. The Pale Fighter made her way back to Jonathan and knelt beside him.
"He's positioned pretty well,"
she said.
"He's attached to the wall somehow, over the water. There's no way I can make a shot like that."
"What about jumping?" asked Augustus. "You can jump pretty far, right?"
"He's at least 100 feet out and over the channel. If I get to the wall, I could climb, but I'm not a very good swimmer."
"Judging from the size of his rounds," said Jonathan, "he would tear you in half by the time that you reached him."
"Agreed," said Keegan. "Better just to withdraw and get backup."
Jonathan grabbed Keegan's shoulder, and slicing pains echoed across the young man's arm. Blood smeared onto Keegan's shirt, and though the headmaster was surprised, he didn't back away.
"No," said Jonathan, his stare burning into Keegan's eyes. "That is never going to be a choice here. Either we save Manners or we lose everything. Those are the only two options."
Keegan's expression was one of genuine surprise. Then, in a draconian tone of voice, he whispered,
"Then know that whatever happens, not one of you will die. We're not going to lose anyone else here the way we lost Donovan."
"I understand," said Jonathan.
"Your plan had better be good."
"It is.
What do you want to do?"
Augustus asked apprehensively.
"We freeze him," Jonathan replied, grinning. Augustus, give that frost to Cog.
Actually, I think I can be of service, Jonathan.
The headmaster interjected, stepping forward.
Oh?
Jonathan exchanged glances with Augustus and Cog.
Starting pitcher for the Fumiston Sootmen for 4 years, my friends.
Is that good?
Cog asked. Augustus grimaced.
I'm not sure I want to bet our lives on a team that hasn't hit the finals in 20 years. No offense, headmaster.
They only missed their marks because I wasn't there, Agent Ellsworth.
Keegan grumbled.
Why not levitate it at him? Asked Jonathan.
That might not be a good idea, actually, said Augustus quickly. Using a spell to affect the sphere might make it, unstable.
Looks like it's my arm, then. Now give it over, said Keegan.
Be my guest, Augustus sighed.
It didn't seem possible that anyone could have known that Crust would be down there, but there they were, trying to foul up his nice, neat kill. Crust had heard the voice of the Jonathan boy before shooting the guards, so he knew that the kid had something to do with it. The assassin was looking forward to hearing that Wallaby had killed the Seeress. The trio didn't take kindly to the fact that she kept predicting things. The sniper's rifle was heavy in Crust's hand, but he considered the massive gun to be rather dainty. It was too polished, with too many moving parts, and the metal was milled too tightly. Without excellent and constant care, the thing would lose accuracy, and Crust hated it. He did like the fact that he blew up Andrews's pistol with the rifle. That was pretty funny, so the weapon wasn't all bad. He far preferred the elephant gun he'd used for the last century or so. Brass Annie was a lot nicer. Crust was there when the cannon was poured, and remembered marveling in its beauty as it came out of the mold. The gun could house a bullet the size of a large gumball, and with enough powder, its shot could punch through a house with no appreciable change in momentum. Sure, he had to load it, and that took a while. But something about the cartridges of his current rifle made him nervous. What if one jammed? Brass Annie never jammed.
Maybe, he thought. Maybe I'll shoot that girl's head off with it. It might be a nice treat to watch. Hope I can finish this before she gets here.
Then Crust briefly considered what he would like to have for dinner afterward. Just as he decided upon a nice, bloody roast beef sandwich with lots of horseradish, his quarry threw something from behind their cover. It was the oldest one of their group who hurled the object, then ducked away behind the stones before Crust could finish thinking about his sandwich. The thing was shiny, blue, and spherical, and it flew in a lobbed arc toward Crust's location. But it fell short and plopped gracefully into the water. Crust watched it sink to the bottom of the channel with great interest, wondering if it was supposed to do something. Maybe it was supposed to distract him. He decided that distraction must have been their plan, and then redoubled his focus upon the cover. He would be ready this time. Everyone's hearts sank alongside the sphere of frost when they heard the empty splash.
I was never good at the long throws,
Keegan muttered, flushing with red. Jonathan sat down on the stairs with his back against the wall.
Is that it?
Augustus nodded.
If it was gonna burst, it would have done so by now.
Did you channel your magic into it?
Yes, blasted I did, said Keegan.
They sat in silence for a few moments while Jonathan considered the implications of the botched throw. Without Agent Manners, something was not going to happen. That something was going to be what prevented the end of the human race. In essence, Jonathan had, in the heat of the moment, passed off the fate of mankind to someone else, based solely upon the fact that the headmaster said he was good at sports.
So maybe it was bad, right?
Jonathan asked, trying to make Keegan feel like he hadn't killed off everyone on Earth.
No, said Augustus. It needed to shatter. That didn't happen.
It doesn't matter,
said Cog.
We need a new plan, Jonathan.
Okay, said Jonathan. I'm thinking.
But he couldn't focus. His mind kept wandering back to the sound of the splash, a symphony of failure
and one little noise. Jonathan's arms throbbed, and his stomach ached. All he could think about was rushing out blindly, desperately trying to draw the sniper's fire, while someone else led the charge.
"Wait," said Keegan. "I could shatter that thing if I could see it."
"I don't know how deep the channel is," said Augustus, "but the frost sphere glows. If that's the case, Headmaster, why don't you just levitate our little sniper out of the nest?"
"I could kill your enemy, Jonathan,"
Auden said quietly into the Harbinger's mind. It wasn't in actual words, but Jonathan knew what Auden felt in that instant.
"Too much mass. Moving a person takes a lot of concentration," the Headmaster replied.
"That's because he's weak. I could leap off that channel and cut his head off before it could fire a shot."
That was what Auden wanted. Jonathan could feel it.
"Once that frost sphere is smashed, I can cross the channel on the ice. Then I can leap to his location from there,"
said Cog.
"Don't foolishly risk your friends' lives for this. Let me help you."
Jonathan tried to shrug off Auden's whispers, but it wasn't easy. Self-doubt and a lack of confidence in his team's abilities drove their way into his mind like wedges through logs. The more the commons cleaved into him, the more Jonathan could feel himself ceding control to the entity within. Jonathan felt the hot drops of blood making their way down his arms. His brain felt like a snowstorm, and he began to lose orientation.
"It's settled then,"
said Cog.
"We're going to smash the sphere, and I'll kill the shooter."
Cog started forward, but Keegan stopped her.
"Wait, what if I can't find the sphere?" he asked.
In that moment, Jonathan's hand felt as though electricity had arced across his palm. He could feel Auden's fury bubbling within him and began to take deep, gulping breaths. A cold film of sweat blossomed from Jonathan's skin. He looked up to see that Augustus was staring right at him, shaking his head slowly. The Harbinger forced himself back into the moment. "I'll distract him," Jonathan said. The words just slipped out before he could think, and Jonathan knew what they meant. The first person out of cover was likely to die, and without the powers of Auden Slade, that fate was almost a certainty for Jonathan. The shooter would put a bullet in him, and everything would be gone. Jonathan didn't feel sick, though. He didn't feel afraid, either. What he felt was electrified, all over, and quickly realized that he was excited about the prospect. Jonathan searched his feelings and found that he didn't want to be a hero. He simply wanted to die.
"Don't be an idiot," said Augustus. "You're a seer, and your plan is totally unacceptable."
"You can't go, Gus. He'll kill you quicker than me," Jonathan replied. Cog frowned.
"Augustus is right. You're not expendable."
Jonathan winced as he balled his bloody fist.
"There's no such thing as an expendable person, Cog."
"Well said," added Keegan. "We can't lose anyone here."
"But," began Augustus, "we can. Cog has to be the one to kill the assassin. Headmaster, you have to break the sphere and Jonathan." Augustus gritted his teeth as Jonathan's eyes met his. "Jonathan's necessary for the humans to have a future," Augustus continued. "So I guess I've already played my part in this thing." "Gus, no," said Jonathan. "See you, Jonathan," said Augustus as he bounded from behind cover. Jonathan's eyes grew wide as he clutched uselessly at the air where Augustus once stood.
"Augustus, no!"
The moist, frosty breeze of the tunnel felt good against Augustus's skin as he rushed down the stairs. Each foot fell directly upon the stone as ordained by his brain, and his senses were quite keen. The young man could feel everything, down to the subtle wavering of the roots of his scalp hairs. He had never been so precise, so graceful in his entire life. It was a shame that it was about to end. A slight crackle and an acrid smell like burning solder lit the air, signifying that Keegan had begun to draw his glyph somewhere behind the young man. Augustus heard the soft yet heavy and sure footfalls of Cog as she charged out from the stairwell. There was the beginning of some strange shout and a guttering noise like cloth flapping in the wind. And lastly, Augustus could swear he heard the melodic clink of a pin clicking into place on a distant sniper rifle. It felt like listening to the turning of the key that would lock him out of the world forever. He hoped he hadn't surprised them so much that his sacrifice would go to waste. He hoped that they would execute their plan before the shooter got a second shot. Most of all, he hoped there was only one shooter. Then came the sound of the cannon in the darkness, an earthquake, a thunderclap, a swallowing howl. The first reaction was one of electricity crawling from the flagstones into his heel and straight up Augustus's spine. Then the wind blew right through Augustus, or so it seemed, like light shining through a window. There was a fire behind his eyes, a sort of mental purity, as all thoughts fell away into nothingness, and for a moment, he simply existed as a man empty. Then Augustus blinked. He couldn't help it. If he had been more self-aware, he might have wondered how many other men blinked at the precise moment of their demise. He would never be ready to die, but he was ready for silence. But the sounds kept coming. The crust of the earth seemed to shatter as the frost exploded underneath the black waters of the canal. He heard the pads of Cog's boots against the ice and her battle cry as she leapt into the air. He heard the shout of an old man and the sound of metal rending metal. Curiously, he opened his eyes again, still upright, still breathing, and the ice water left in his veins. Augustus suddenly felt warm again as he surveyed his surroundings. The tunnel was still there, and Keegan was at the top of the stairwell, his hand in the formation of a fist. The water of the tunnel was frozen, and in the distant pipes that lined the ceiling, Augustus saw Cog decapitate a lone shooter. But their success wasn't what held Augustus's attention. It was the armored figure of Auden Slade directly in front of him. The Commoner King's blade was drawn, flat to the shooter, and still ringing with power from the impact of the bullet. Augustus could see a neat little hole in the nearby stone, still smoking with hovering rock dust. Slade's brilliant golden cloak billowed in the young agent's face, and he stumbled back a bit. "He," began Slade in Jonathan's voice, "really, really doesn't like this, Gus." Augustus couldn't quite understand what was happening.
"What?"
"He heard what you said about me. He wants me to turn around right now," Jonathan labored, "and cleave you in two." Slade strained against himself, his muscles bucking and shivering underneath the luminous armor. It was clear that the figure wanted to turn to face him, but was unable.
"What?"
said Augustus, barely lucid.
"Augustus, would you just run away already?"
So Augustus ran. It was a fairly strange feeling as the pale woman's blade bit into Crust's spinal column. The world spun as his head tumbled downward, the blue ice rushing to meet him.
"Decapitated again. I hope they don't try to burn me corpse,"
Crust thought as his head thudded against the ice.
Even though the Seekers have triumphed in the tunnels below, they do not yet know of their losses above. How will they survive without the help of the Seeress? Find out next time on The Gearheart. Gearheart, the Gearheart music, and the Gearheart podcast are copyright 2009 Alex White. Voices courtesy of Renee and Alex White. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for a message from our sponsors.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Big Jim Dugan's Ballet Studio, strong moves for gentle dances. Do you dream of becoming a pretty, pretty ballerina but don't want to do any of that namby-pamby sissy boy stuff? Big Jim Dugan is the man for you. With everything from his patented move, the lumberjack, to his high-quality plaid leotards, Big Jim will show you what you need to know. Big Jim Dugan's Ballet Studio, just off I-95 South, 3 miles from Bud's Video and Tanning Salon. And by Taco Ocho, with our 8 signature tacos. You won't find a taste like ours anywhere else. Stop in for our new Chicken Liver Supreme, a tasty flour tortilla with our zesty sour cream sauce, topped off with a half pound of juicy chicken liver and served with a deep-fried bacon-battered hard-boiled egg. Or perhaps you'd like our Rice Grande, a full serving of our delicious unseasoned white rice, spread onto a plain flour taco and served with a side of water. Taco Ocho, we're 8 ways from awesome.